Hello, I'm John Pettit and I'm chair of H800. I'm in the studio with two colleagues from the OU, Neil Slater and Martin Weller. Martin's Professor of Educational Technology at the OU. He's interested in new technologies and the implications of digitisation for education. He blogs at edtechie.net. Neil's Director of Learning Innovation at the OU, and before that was Director of the VLE programme. He's been involved in the research, development and management of e-learning since 1990. He blogs at slater.com, and he wishes me to point out that there's a C in there, S-C-L-A-T-E-R. Having introduced Martin and Neil, I'm going to ask them to debate a number of issues around VLEs and PLEs, personal learning environments. We're going to be talking about VLEs, which overlap with and are sometimes known as learning management systems, managed learning environments and similar terms. We're going to be comparing them with PLEs, and the debate is really going to centre around that. Not so long ago, VLEs were quite a hot topic. Many institutions now use them, and they certainly have their supporters. But not everyone's enthusiastic. For some people, they represent a rather closed and controlling system, at odds with the view that students should take charge of their own learning. Stephen Downes, for example, famously said, and in fact he said it here at the OU when he was visiting, and he probably said it in other places too, he said that students own education. So Martin, turning to you first, is that the heart of your position on, perhaps you'd say, your opposition to VLEs, that they constrain learners, or at least that VLEs leave out too much that is important and valuable?
I think it's just a more pragmatic approach, really, just that there are so many fantastic tools out there that are free and robust and easy to use, that no VLE which tries to comprise all these tools will ever kind of match each of those individual tools. You end up with a kind of not quite a lowest common denominator, but at least not quite as good as any individual tool will be. So it's really just about trying to give students the best tools they can use for their purposes.
But don't they need some kind of guidance as to which tools they use and support on that? You're saying kind of free for all.
I think what you want to get away from is they exist outside of universities, and the students have a life pre-university and while they're at university, and they use all this fantastic stuff, then come to university and get a substandard experience. So I think we, in education, we don't need to try and battle this stuff, we can just take stuff that's there. But I agree, you know, you're going to need people to be using the same types of things all to be able to communicate. So perhaps what you want to have is some kind of default learning environment, first of all, which is a number of these tools combined together, but then allow students to swap in their own preference. If they've got a particular blog, then there's no reason why they shouldn't be using that blog rather than a university-provided one.
Well, can I just butt in here for a minute? Because there might be a good reason why you want them to use a university-provided blog. If they, the blog system they're using is inaccessible, for example, it doesn't work for people with screen readers, then that's an issue. It disenfranchises people that are blind. It may be a system that isn't robust and goes down for some reason. Of course, our university systems go down too sometimes, but at least we can try and do something about that. There's one other major issue in that if students are using a whole lot of different tools, they've got to remember a whole lot of different usernames and passwords potentially, and that frequently they'll forget them. This has been proven by lecturers who've tried to set up their own personal learning environments comprising a whole lot of different tools around the web, and half the problem is students just forgetting their IDs.
So VLEs, Martin's point, VLEs substandard experience, are you rejecting that idea?
There's no doubt that you'll be able to get more up-to-date tools freely over the internet than universities will be able to provide in their virtual learning environments. If you look at the wiki, for example, this is an interesting case, the wiki within the Open University virtual learning environment, that works within Moodle, and we've developed our own wiki within Moodle, and it comprises what we consider as the most useful functionality for students in a wiki. That means we've cut out quite a lot of the bells and whistles that you'll find in MediaWiki, one of the main commercial...
And you've taken that decision, in a sense, on behalf of students.
We have, and that's through our experience of trying the different tools out and knowing that some students, not all, can be confused by too much functionality. So they may not be getting the most fantastic, up-to-date wiki system that's out there, but we would argue that you don't actually need that for educational purposes, and it's more important to have a system that's been tested, that's robust, that's accessible, and that has the main functionality that students require to complete that assignment, for example.
So cutting down choices, Martin, is a price worth paying if for a slightly reduced experience.
I think Neil's hit on two of the big arguments against the kind of decentralised, purely approach, and they are authentication and integration and robustness. I think the authentication one, it is an issue, and there was a post recently from a student who was a particular university saying they have 10 different sites they have to go to, four different ways of submitting assignments, and they were kind of really fed up. I can see their point, because you don't need to be going around lots of places. But I think we're beginning to get to a stage now where you could, for instance, easily have lots of these things brought together within a site like iGoogle or NetVibes, and these tools just operate within a kind of iframe, so you can bring them all together. And some of the authentication might well be solved by having things like OpenID, where you can take your same ID around to different sites. The robustness argument, I don't buy. I think it's an argument often put forward by IT services people that these things are flaky and will go down and we can't trust them. I don't think there's any evidence that they go down more often than university-hosted systems. And in some ways you could argue that by having a distributed, decentralised approach, you are spreading your risk. So if I'm looking at some, if I've got some of my resources on YouTube, say, well, if YouTube goes down, then I've still got some resources available over on SlideShare. So, whereas if the university system goes down, then it's everything that goes down. So you could argue the other way about the robustness thing.
So you're talking about a distributed risk, in a sense.
Yeah, that's right.
So how do you feel about that?
I think one of the key issues is whether the activity that you're requiring the student to engage in is assessed or not. Because if it's assessed, that puts a whole new dimension on it. It means that the university is then responsible to some extent for ensuring that those systems are up. If you're letting students use any system they want for a wiki, for example, to collaborate with, and there is some problem with that system, then there's not a lot the university can do in that case if there's a glitch. If the university's hosted system goes down, then the university can give extensions for that assignment. And also it can ensure things that I mentioned before, like usability and accessibility, so that it's not disadvantaging some students. And another aspect to this is staff. It's all very well for highly technically literate professors like Martin here, who's engaged in courses with fairly technical students as well, to recommend their students to go off and use whatever tool they like. But the majority of staff in our universities are not as technical as that. They need guidance. They don't want to just have to support themselves.
Okay, so we've got 5,000 students on a level one course. That happens in Open University and a number of mega universities mm-hmm. around the world. Surely you're not advocating that they should be told to go and find whatever tools you want and bring them in?
I think Neil's on the third main objection to the kind of approach, which is support. And I think that this really gets to quite a key issue in education, is how much do we want to train students to learn particular packages and systems? And I think there's probably a continuum here. So certainly, you know, as Neil says, master's level, particularly on technology subjects, you might just say, here's some tools, go away and use them. It's not our job to support them, support you using them. You should be proficient enough to be able to do that. But perhaps at a level one course, particularly in a non-technical subject, you need to do a lot more of that support. But I think what we want to avoid doing is teaching people how to use Package X, you know, so you come away from studying knowing how to use that university's VLE. Rather, what you want to do is teach people much more general skills, like using technology to communicate effectively, for instance. And I think those type of skills, you can then it becomes more useful to give students a range of tools to play with. And a lot of these tools, because they're not designed for education, it's designed for the general population. I think that the threshold to entry is much lower now than it was 3 years ago, even, you know, that there's lots of things that you can just go along and use straight off. They're kind of very simple, straightforward. You don't need to download anything, you do all through your browser. So I think some of the support issues are overstated in how much people would require them. But I agree there is an issue there, and it's probably a kind of sliding scale.
Within a cohort, though, even, say, like a master's programme in a technological subject, we'd still have quite a wide diversity of confidence, wouldn't we, among the students? I mean, I remember when I started studying the MAODE a decade or so ago, I'd never used a bulletin board system before, and you know, I got to know that, and my confidence grew across the year as I got to know that and one or two other very limited and well-supported tools.
Yes, but I think your confidence probably grew because you used it. That's the key, just getting people to use the stuff. It's more through practice rather than through training.
But we were all using two or three tools again and again and again, rather than one student using his favourite six and me using my favourite six.
No, I agree. You need to have a kind of common approach, because if you're doing your discussion over in a tool called Seismic and I'm doing my discussion over here in a wiki, then we're not going to talk about this. So you don't have to negotiate every activity. You've got to have some kind of common set of things, and that's probably more down to the educator saying, we're going to be using these tools, here's my kind of default environment for you to use.
And what about the accessibility argument? Don't we in the university have a particular responsibility which third party producers don't have in the same kind of way? Haven't we got a particular obligation to pick up a point that Neil made?
I think accessibility is sometimes, but always, sometimes used as an excuse not to do things. It's like, oh, we can't use technology X or Y because of accessibility. And I think you could apply the same argument that I put forward for the robustness, in that by having a distributed tools, then people can find the tool that best suits their particular needs, rather than everyone having to use the same tool and trying to force everyone to use a kind of common set of tools.
Again, this comes down to whether that tool is required for assessment and for collaboration, because quite clearly, as you said yourself, you can't have one person using one wiki system and someone else using another wiki system. These are designed for collaboration. So it seems to me that if the university's got an assessed activity that requires use of a wiki, the university's got to point people towards a particular wiki system. Now, that could be an externally hosted one, but it just makes it so much easier if everyone's using the same wiki within that university.
And is it partly that it's university convenience? It's easier, in a sense, for us as a large provider if we have a limited number of tools. Is it really for our convenience more than for the students' convenience?
It's both, I would say. Another issue is, I mean, if again we pointed people to a service outside the university, or we brought in a bit of open source software and hosted it internally, then we've got to stay on top of that system. We've got to know what's happening with it. We've got to potentially provide support to students who are using it. And that can get very complex with a whole range of different tools that are out there. So again, it is partly for us and our convenience and to reduce the costs that we're incurring overall for supporting these systems.
And thereby the costs we have to charge students to some extent.
Yeah.
So Martin, I'm just thinking that if we were to implement your vision, it might in fact get considerably more complicated for students, because although at one end of the spectrum you've got a course where students are very confident and you say, here are some tools, or go and find your own and so on, what we're talking about is having a kind of zoned setup where we'll have other courses where students need a bit more support and a certain amount of freedom, and other courses where they need very little freedom, we think, and we just give them two or three tools and give them lots of support. Doesn't that actually make it more complicated to make our offerings as a university?
I think it depends what you want to be doing with students. There's fabulous technology out there that you can make learning sort of engaging and exciting and get people to see things in new ways. And I think it would be a shame not to be using it just because we want to keep things simple for us, for our own sake. So, and there's lots of tools that we would never even bother to invent because perhaps they're not, their usage isn't strong enough, but they might be fun for people to try. There's a package called Extra Normal, for instance, which allows you to create little 3D movies online. And it's quite fun to play with. And you can imagine students sort of spending a little while creating a movie just to share with their friends that explains a topic. Now, we're not going to develop a package like that. And I think, you know, Neil's argument that it means we have to keep up to date with all these things, I think the reverse is true. It means we don't have to bother keep up to date with these things, because by having a distributed model, then each of those providers kind of keeps up to date, whereas when we centralise, we're never going to keep out each of the individual items kind of as current as a commercial provider will.
Another aspect that we could bring in here, or an example that I could provide for a slightly different approach, is we're currently doing an evaluation of two different externally hosted systems which will provide functionality to our students, and that's Google Apps for Education and Microsoft Live at Edu. And these are two systems that we're primarily looking at to provide an email solution for our students, and it also offers storage capability, so they can store all sorts of documents in there, and increasingly all sorts of other functions such as online applications, so you'd be able to edit your Word document or your spreadsheet online using one of those applications. And we don't see that as advantageous to try and host that sort of stuff internally, because both of those companies are prepared to do that for us for nothing, and offer a service level agreement which is 99.9% uptime, which is actually more than we can manage ourselves for our own internally hosted systems. So I think there are examples where it is possible to work with external systems working in the cloud.
Well, that brings me to my last point, really. I asked you to take fairly polarised positions for the sake of the debate, and you've done that. But I'm just wondering if we could spend the last couple of minutes looking at what a vision might be, and in a sense you've started on that path, Neil, by talking about some kind of integration or adoption of tools from outside and bring them into our teaching. Could you, between you, just kind of map out, bring your positions together and see how far apart you really are?
I think a couple of times Neil mentioned assessment, and I think that's absolutely right. There's a difference between kind of the service level agreement that you need, that Neil talked about, for kind of real core enterprise systems, but it doesn't mean everything has to be at that same level. So you can have, I think there still needs to be room for play and exploration, of course. So there are tools that you wouldn't need to have anything like that level of agreement. You wouldn't have any room with them. It's just they kind of exist in the cloud and you can say, go away and use these. But maybe assessment is the kind of key, that when you want stuff to be used for assessment, then it kind of needs to become much more under the university's control, or at least kind of have that level of assurance. But at the same time, I think assessment needs to change, and we're kind of still stuck in a mode of thinking of assessment as it was kind of 10, 20 years ago. You know, it's doing the essay in different ways, and I think maybe we need to explore how we change assessment as well. So there's a kind of a dialogue between both sides, those things, I think, that needs to happen.
Can you give an example of a couple of ways of assessment you're thinking of?
You know, you mentioned working collaboratively in a wiki, so it becomes much more of the kind of the groups. Overall might be a kind of a multimedia project that they develop online, and being part of the wiki is part of that involvement. And what the person Mark says, that kind of is more of the process, and so you're less tied into these kind of very strict deadlines and haven't been able to verify what's happened and what's been delivered.
And Neil, how far do you buy that vision that Martin's just set out?
Well, if we go back to the issue of PLEs versus VLEs, the example of a wiki is a good one. I think that if you're using it for assessment, you have to host it internally, or at least have an agreement with an external service provider. And I'm not quite sure I agree entirely with Martin's argument that it doesn't have to be quite so time limited in a wiki, because there's still some point, if you're assessing people's contributions to a wiki, where you have to lock down the wiki so that it can be marked and assessed
And QA'd, if necessary.
And QA'd, that's right. I mean, you could have the wiki going on after that, but there has to be a point where the assessment takes place, and you have to be able to roll back to that point.
Just to go back to the kind of VLE, PLE argument, I think what we may see is a kind of a gradual blurring of the boundaries between what we think of these things. So, for instance, in a VLE, if you allow people to use embed function, then you can very quickly start slotting in a lot of these new tools. And so what becomes kind of centrally hosted and what becomes out there in the cloud becomes much more blurred. And I think that's what we'll see. So in some ways, you might see the VLE kind of disappearing into the background more, and it become much more of the kind of hosting platform.
Yeah, I agree with that, and that's something I've been thinking about for a long time, that the VLE will become more of a back-end system, but it needs to be able to export its data into other systems, so into Facebook, for example, if that's where students want to be. I think if I can add one further note, there's a lot of people like Martin who are highly innovative in universities, who feel very frustrated by the restrictions of the centrally provided systems, which are never as feature-rich as the systems that they can access freely on the internet. And I think what Martin's trying to avoid is being restricted in his innovation, and that's something I support completely. And I think there is room for use of other software out there on a small scale, experimentally, trying things out, and when they become feasible and mainstreamable, then they need to be taken on board by the university somehow, and all the legal issues and accessibility issues and all these kind of things considered fully, and then they can be rolled out to larger groups of students.
Yeah, I think if you kind of look at the history of learning systems in universities, we had a very kind of decentralised approach, first of all, where every faculty had their own either bespoke or their own VLE system. And then there was a kind of, in the last sort of 5 years, there was a big kind of centralisation that happened to it to try and provide kind of a uniform experience and an enterprise level system. And now I think we're beginning to see a move back to kind of decentralisation. And I think it needs to go through those cycles. So we need to go through that kind of very strong centralisation process first to kind of make e-learning robust. But now we're beginning to see we can roll back out to with some kind of innovation at the kind of faculty or individual level.
Well, I look forward to talking to you both in a couple of years to see how the cycle has moved on since our conversation today. Martin and Neil, thanks very much for joining us.